The message you are about to hear is brought to you by Art Bradick. And now, Mr. Bradick.
You know, it's interesting to me that in life, everything today seems to be compartmentalized. We live in little boxes. We wake up in the morning, there we go, and get a little box out of the cupboard, it seems, and pour it, go to another box and get some milk, pour it into the cereal and so on. And it goes into our stomach, then we get into our little box that has wheels on it. We drive to our jobs and we go to a compartment there, a box at work. And so we enter then a little place within the building we work in, the box we work in. It's our office or our little compartment where we do our work. And we work most of the day, and then we take a break or two or a lunch break, and then we go to another box that's a little different compartment. Sometimes you feel like a little rat in a labyrinth, I think, sometimes. Anyway, then we go back to our compartment, work some more, and then we go home again to our house, which is another box, and we tend to watch things on an electronic screen that's on a box, and then we crawl into our comfy compartment, and there we go to sleep. And we start it all over the next day. We're so used to compartmentalizing everything. We have filing cabinets, and inside are various papers that are very interesting to us and important to us, and we put them, each one, in a separate category in that filing cabinet, and each one has its place, and each one is important, and we don't want to lose it. Then we turn to our computers. And everything is in a certain folder in our computers. And it's just like the filing cabinet. But then there's other compartments in our lives. There are compartments in our head. And it's kind of like the computer we have at home, that there's certain things that are stored there. In fact, since the invention of the computer, we've learned to do something with the compartments in our head. And that is that we can be multitasking. We can be walking down the corridor thinking about one aspect of our job, talking to Joe as we're going along, and suddenly another workmate comes along. We stop our talk with Joe and we can go to a totally different topic with Sam, who's walking towards us, and then we can just flip back. So we can suspend our one conversation so that we can go ahead with the other one. We can multitask now like the computer. So anyway, my point is that when we go to our jobs at work each day, we have a compartment in our head for that. If we're younger and we're going to school, we have a certain compartment in our head for that and for the people we meet there. And I know when I was working, I had a certain compartment for my little socialization group that I associated with at work. There was a certain group in my head, a category, and I knew things about these different people, and they were filed away there. And then there's a compartment for what we do at home, and we have a compartment for each one of our children, don't we? In our heads, who they are and what they're like. And then we have a compartment for the church, and there's a certain way we act there, and a certain way we do things, and it's kind of, we have that in our head. But that can be a problem, because sometimes we actually multitask with God. We can be with Him, we can pray to Him, and then we can suspend that and go in a totally different direction. We have that ability to do that in our brains, and sometimes we do that. And that's why in James, it speaks about every good gift comes down from the Father of lights in verse 17. And it says, with whom is no variableness, neither shadow of turning. And as we heard in the reading, well, we're enticed when we're drawn away of our own lusts. Why is that? How can we get drawn away of our own lusts and end up sinning? You know how? Christ isn't in that compartment in our life. That's what happens. He's not there. So it's interesting that there's this difference between God and us. God has various departments. As it says, he knows the name of every star. That's a compartment he has in his head of the stellar system. He has that there. But the difference is that every single piece of the compartments that God has is filled with his holiness. We're different. We're filled with memories. We have memories of things that we've done before we ever came in the church of God, before we were ever called. We have compartments in our head which we identify with sin. And there's things we like about it. And so we actually find ourselves doing things that Jesus Christ would not do. I always reminded yesterday of one particular example. My son and his wife and a friend, we were going to go to his timeshare that he had. And it turned out that the only place we could go was Las Vegas. And so we talked about it. And since that was the only chance that year to go, we decided we'd go ahead and go. So we went there, and we weren't thinking we were going to do much there. We certainly weren't going to gamble, but we were going to go see the lights and see how it had grown and maybe see a show or something like that. Well, my friends were there. My family were getting some discount tickets there. And I was standing next to a row of slot machines. Well, I wasn't planning on ever playing a slot machine. I hadn't put any money away. You know, sometimes people put money away for gambling and stuff when they go to Vegas. I didn't put any money away because I knew I wouldn't gamble. I didn't believe in it. But then I put my hands in my pockets, and there were three quarters. And so I said, well, I know I'm not going to win anything, so what, I'll just put a quarter in. So I put a quarter in, and then I put a second quarter in, and then this horrible noise started, and I thought I broke the machine. I'd never played one of these before. And what had happened is I had won $125 in quarters, and they all came clanking out and filled this huge bucket that was so heavy. And I was just like flabbergasted. How did this happen? Anyway, I promised everybody, I showed my winnings to everybody, and I promised them, I said, I am going to take you to the best breakfast ever. And then something happened. Every time I saw a machine, I looked at it differently. I thought, maybe that one will pay off too. And I began to take some of those quarters out of the bucket and put them in different machines and try them just to see. You know, try them just to see. And after about $30 worth of quarters, they rescued, though. They took them from me so that they'd have a good breakfast. But how did that happen, you see? How did that ever happen? It was so funny to me. Anyway, later as I thought about this, I realized something. Jesus Christ would not be there putting quarters in those machines, would he? He'd never see him doing that. Now, how was it that had happened to me? You know, looking back at this, I can see how the spirit of that whole environment had gotten into me and taken over. And there was a compartment then in my head where Jesus Christ didn't rule. You see the point I'm getting at? Today, I wonder how many of us are like that. Have we in any way compartmentalized Jesus Christ? Do we go to work and allow things to happen there that we would not allow to happen in church, for instance, right here? Let's go to Proverbs 3. Proverbs 3. We do things in the world, and then we come to church, and we sometimes act differently. And we all, I believe, do that to some degree. And that's the point of the message I want to get across to us today. We all compartmentalize things, but we cannot, and I say we must not, compartmentalize Jesus Christ. Monday through Friday, we have our work lives, we have our school lives, we have our family, we have our friends, we have our TV and computer time, we have all of that, we have our hobby time, we have spare time and social time with friends. And then we have the Sabbath, and we have God's time. But is this the only place we put God? Do we compartmentalize him, and this is the place for him? Now, I don't think it's the only place, because I know we pray, and I know we study, and I know sometimes we fast. But you understand my point. Is God only confined to those times in our lives? Is he put into one of those few compartments? Is he subconsciously locked out of other aspects of our life? Because his desire, and in fact, a Christian requirement, is that we integrate Jesus Christ into every aspect of our lives. We can't have compartments where he's not there. We can't have compartments where he doesn't rule. And so it says in Proverbs 3 and verse 5, trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not to your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and then he'll direct your paths. Today in the church, we wonder, where is God? We don't see the healings we used to see. We don't see the miracles. We don't see these things happening. We don't see God visibly working powerfully in our lives or in the life of the church. And could this be one of them, one of the reasons? Jesus Christ is talking about all of our ways. In every compartment is what he's talking about, not just those times when it's convenient. And he says in verse 7, don't be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and depart from evil. But sometimes we think we're wise. Sometimes we think we can get away with it. Sometimes we think no one will see. Or sometimes, like in my case, you just stumble into it because it's an empty compartment where he doesn't exist or you're not thinking about it. You know, there was a Christian, if you'll go to Philippians 1, for Christian magazine, that's the Christianity Today. And in it, they talked of a survey that they did. And they surveyed hundreds of pastors, and they asked them what were the 12 most important things to the pastors. And, of course, the pastors somewhere in there wanted to have a big church and all that. But primarily, first and second, the primary one was they wanted their congregants to have a real solid knowledge of the Bible. And secondarily, they wanted them to be able to integrate that. They wanted them to be able to put that knowledge to work in actions in their lives. And I want you to add me to that list of pastors, because that's what I want. And that's what I want to do today. I want to bring out how we sometimes don't do that. That's what I want. Philippians 1, that's what God wants. In verse 8, for God is my record how greatly I long after you all in the bowels of Jesus Christ, and that I pray that your love may abound yet more and more in knowledge and all judgment. So I want us to understand the Bible. I want, and I think you do understand it. But you understand my point. Now, as we see the foreclosure issue, as we see a $700 billion bailout of the lending and investment institutions, and now as we see the end coming, it's got to be that we take this a step further than we have so far. The end is coming. It's all unraveling right before our eyes, and we've got to take it further. You know, it's okay to have biblical knowledge, but we've got to use that biblical knowledge to make judgments in our lives. We've got to judge how we're going to work. We've got to judge how we're going to think. We've got to judge what we're going to say and how we're going to say it. We've got to use it in what we let our eyes see. We've got to use it in what we desire. And we've got to use it, the knowledge of the Bible, to judge what it is we do. Verse 10, that you may be approved, things that are excellent, and may be sincere and without offense until the day of Christ, being filled with the fruits of righteousness, which are by Jesus Christ, under the glory and the praise of God. Well, how are we going to be filled if we got empty compartments, or compartments that we secretly don't let him in? 2 Thessalonians, if you will. I know that there are lots of people in the Church of God today that like knowledge. It's interesting to me. It my experience is that we kind of like the feeling of, well, we know more than the other churches know, and it can make us feel kind of good because of our human nature. But knowledge will puff up. But knowledge by itself is useless. It is just useless by itself. You've got to do something with that knowledge, and we must be using it, not just in part of our lives, but we've got to be using our knowledge of this Bible and of God and of His ways and His laws in every part of our lives. And so 2 Thessalonians 2 says this in verse 15, "Therefore, brethren, stand fast and hold to the traditions which you've been taught, whether by word or epistle. Now our Lord Jesus Christ Himself and God, even our Father, which has loved us and given us everlasting consolation and good hope, through grace, comfort your hearts and establish you in every good word and work." And so it is that the Bible, well, it isn't like it isn't telling us this over and over again. It is telling this. I mean, every time you open the Bible, you practically see this same thing. To be pure and to be sincere and to be without wax is what sincere means. It means don't be a fake. Don't be a hypocrite. And it tells us repeatedly this message. And therefore it says this, 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 31. "Therefore, whatever you eat or you drink or whatever you do, do all to the glory of God." Everything we do is to be done to the glory of God. So do you and I eat to the glory of God? Is that what we really do? Really? Do we even think about God when we're shopping? I mean, I know we watch out for pork and shellfish and those things, but those have kind of been automatic. You know, we know what we're getting. My point is, when we're shopping, are we thinking about Him? And when we put our food on the table, are we thinking about Him or are we thinking about ourselves? Because I didn't think about it before Him. I was thinking about me. It was my stomach, wasn't it? After all. And I knew what I liked, you know, cheeseburgers, Cokes, and as much as I wanted, right? So was I thinking about Him in that compartment of my life, or was I kind of keeping Him out of that compartment? You see my point. So you and I understand we're one of the few churches that realize that it's okay to drink alcohol. It's not a sin. But when we do it, are we thinking, how would Christ do it? Are we with Him? Is He in that compartment? Philippians 3, if you will. Back to Philippians, this time in verse 3. Or are we just simply pleasing our own palate? What are we doing? Are we deadening the pain we feel because of the agonies of life sometimes? Are we drinking without thinking of Him? So consider the Apostle Paul. Here he was living 30 years or so of his life a certain way, dedicated to a certain goal, and he studied the scriptures so that he could argue with the best of the rabbis of his day. He could keep their laws perfectly, and he could do all of these things. He was one of the best of the best. And so seemingly, out of nowhere, he's confronted by Christ, and then his entire life changed. Notice what he now says in Philippians 3 and verse 8. "Yes, doubtless I count all things but loss for the excellency of the knowledge of Christ Jesus my Lord, for whom I've suffered the loss of all things and do count them but dung that I may win Christ and be found in Him, not having my own righteousness, which is of the law, but that which is through the faith of Christ, that is, the righteousness which is of God by faith, that's Him living in us. Why? That I may know Him and the power of His resurrection and the fellowship of His sufferings, even being made conformable even to His death." Colossians 3. What about us? Do we consider all the things that we used to do and the way we used to live? Do we consider all of that dung? Or We feel somewhat like Moses, where he was willing to give up the pleasures of sin for a season there in Egypt. See, when Paul was converted, his entire purpose for living changed completely. And that's supposed to have happened to us too. And every single thing that we're doing is to be centered around him. You know, in retrospect, I must have thought that much of life would just go on automatically. Because I was often running on automatic control. I wasn't always thinking of Jesus in everything I did. Sometimes I was just thinking of myself. It's an interesting phenomena that happens. But now I see more clearly than then. We are to take Jesus into every single crack and crevice and compartment that is in our head and in our brain. Colossians 3 and verse 17. And whatsoever you do in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God and the Father by him. Whatever we do, whether it's what we say or whatever actions we might take, we've got to be considering how would he view this. We've got to have him with us in this compartment of our lives. This means everything it says. Everything. Every single thing. Do everything in his name. That is, everything is to be done by his authority and his backing behind it. We don't leave him out of any compartments in our lives. We do it together and we stay together all the time. That's the intent and that's the purpose. Now, there was once a minister who was traveling by train through England. And he and one other person were the only people in the train compartment, if you will. And as they were going, they began to chat a little bit. And the young man talked to the man and found out he was a minister. And he said, well, you know, I'm a Christian too. But I find it so hard to resist the temptations that come my way. I find it so difficult. I just can't live up to it, he said. And the minister looked at him and he said, do you think I can take this ballpoint pen, as round as it is, and do you think, he pulls out a Bible, do you think I can balance that on this Bible cover while the train's rocking and rolling around? And the young man laughed and he said, no way. And so he took out his Bible and he took his pen and he did this. And the man laughed and he said, you're holding it. And he said, of course, who would ever think a pen could stand up straight on the Bible without somebody holding it? And then the man said, I get it. You're telling me that I can't do it alone, that I've got to be held up by Jesus Christ. If I'm going to stand upright on this Bible, I've got to have him doing it there with me. And that's the point, isn't it? We have to take him wherever we go. In every situation, if he's there with us, we're not going to say wrong things. We're not going to do wrong things, are we? It's the key to take him with us wherever we go. None of us can live God's way by ourselves. Now, I know we're living in the last days, and I know that things have changed greatly, and I know that a lot of women's magazines have come out, and I know that there's feminism has spread its face across our land in every single magazine. It's in every sitcom, and it's on all the movies. It's everywhere, okay? And so we're living in that world, and I know it's a difficult world to live in. But it says here in Colossians 3, and it says in verse 18, wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands as is fit in the Lord. The only way you can submit to your husband is you have to be in the Lord. That's the only way I think you could ever do it. You know? Now, Paul writes that no matter what society is doing, no matter what their values and standards are, that we can't put Christ into that compartment. And that's not a compartment we belong in. You understand what I mean? We can't go along with their values and their standards. We can't take him there. And so think about it. When we're married to Jesus Christ and there's a wonderful marriage ceremony up there, do you think we're going to mock and ridicule our husbands? It's not going to happen, is it? We would never even dream of it. But yet in this life, we think we can, or we think it's okay, or we think there's reason, there's always cause. But you understand my point, that if we take Christ with us into that relationship, we're going to do it the way he wants us to do it. We'll look forward in the kingdom to doing Christ's will and not our own. And that's what Christ wants us to practice now in this life. And we can do it if Jesus Christ is there with us. But if we keep him out of that part of our life, then anything's possible. Any kind of thing can happen, and it often does. Colossians 3 and verse 19, husbands, love your wives, and don't be bitter against them. Well, wives make mistakes, don't they? They can become fearful if they don't feel secure. It's typical. They can get moody. Sometimes wives can even yell at you. And the husband can get turned off. And of course, we don't want Christ turned off with us. But we think, well, that's different, don't we? We think it's different. But there is no different. If we expect God to love us, then we've got to love them. We've got to show them love and be demonstrative. That's what they need. And we've got to love them if they make mistakes. And we've got to love them when they don't always do what it is we want them to do. If we become bitter towards our wife, we think that we're only talking to them. But the reason is because Christ isn't there. Because if Christ is in that compartment, we'll see very clearly that we are, in fact, talking to him, one of his children, that way. What would you say if he were standing there? Just think, men. What would we say when our wives do the exact opposite of what we have asked them to do, and now Christ is standing there? Well, we would be pretty loving in our approach, don't you think? I think we would be. Much more understanding, much more kind with Jesus there. So, why don't we do it? Why don't we do it? But we fly in automatic without him there. He's not the co-pilot or navigator, you know, telling us which way to go. So, my point is we've got to strive. You see what my point is? We've got to strive to take Christ into every single compartment of our lives. And our children, they're not exempt. You guys are younger, but you're not exempt. You know, you may not have been called like your parents were called in the same exact way, but the scriptures are very clear on this. You're in a different category. Sanctified, it says. Set apart is what it says. That is for a holy use. And it says your children are holy. And so you too have a responsibility. And so it says in chapter 3 and verse 20, children, obey your parents in all things, for this is well-pleasing to the Lord. This is what you're after, and this is going to make a difference in Jesus Christ marrying us or not. This is what's going to make the difference in us being those precious jewels. This is what's going to make the difference in whether or not we are protected and finally married by him. And it is this: if he is the one running our lives and it's not us, if we are conforming to his image, if we're living the way that he lives, if we're thinking the way that he thinks, then we're going to have this opportunity of a place of safety and a place in the first resurrection. But I believe without this, we are kidding ourselves. If we think we can have a double life, you remember what he read in James? A double-minded man is unstable, and don't think you're going to receive anything. So the only way to do this is to bring him into every part of our life. It's the only way to do it. What about fathers in Colossians 3 and 21? Fathers, provoke not your children to anger, lest they be discouraged. And so I've seen so many cases where people in the church, fathers in the church, will expect so much more from their children than they ever would have expected from themselves when they were young. You know, and our children are way better than some of us were. You have to admit it. Do we ever praise them for it? Do we ever take time to get to know them, who they are? Do we ask them questions and have heart-to-heart talks with them? Do we share our innermost thoughts and feelings? Do we really strive to get to know who is this unique individual that is my child? Well, I think we will if we're trying to please Jesus Christ. Do we spend meaningful time with them? And is Christ in this compartment? I mean, really in this compartment? Are we bringing him in to our relationship with those who we love and those in our family? We go to that department that's at work. We go to that cubicle. We go to that little... And I have been in some offices, I'm telling you, where the cubicles go on forever and ever and ever. They're just all the way across the room. And it's just another row and another row and another row. But when we go to that cubicle or when we go to that lunchroom, and I have heard some horrible things said in those lunchrooms, and what's it like then? Do we take Christ with us when we go in those places? Now, I remember telling the story years ago, and I'll tell it again, about there was a man I went to church with many, many years ago, and we were friends. And I was at a parts store buying parts for an air conditioning unit. And he walked in and I said, "How's it going? Boy, I haven't seen you." I was so happy to see the brethren during the week. It was like such an exciting thing. And he started talking to me and he used God's name in vain. He was mad at the manager of the factory where he worked. And he had to get this part. And, it didn't work out the way he thought it should. And he's using God's name in vain. Don't you see what he was doing? He had one compartment that it was here at church, the church compartment, nice dress, looked nice, well behaved. Then there was the other compartment at work where he was a man's man. And he could use the language as well as those other men. So you understand my point. Do we take Jesus with us when we go into our job? Or are we finding ourselves too rushed, under too much pressure? And so we end up doing what? Going it alone, without him. But sometimes the only way to make our jobs meaningful is to take Jesus to work with us. Colossians 3 and verse 22. "Servants, obey in all things your masters according to the flesh, not with eye service as men pleasers, but in singleness of heart, fearing God. And whatsoever you do, do it heartily to the Lord, and not as unto other men." Boy, you know, if you take work and you are acting as though you're doing this for Christ and as if he is there, and you're doing the kind of work he would want done, and you're obeying your boss or your manager, the department head, the way that they want it done, there is a really deep sense, underlying sense of joy that can come from doing a job that you can be proud of. 1 Peter 2. There's something I want us to always remember. I know that it's hard to remember one sermon to the next sometimes, but if we could just stick this in our head, in 1 Peter 2, we could just stick it in our head and always remember it. You and I, we're not just someone off the street. We're not one of those people walking downtown. We're not one of the people in the buses or in the cabs, the people that are out there working today. You and I are the children of God. 1 Peter 2 and verse 9. "You are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a particular people, that we should show forth the praises of him that's called us out of darkness into his marvelous light." We didn't belong to him in the past. We were our own man. We were our own woman, and we did whatever we wanted. And it usually led to pain, and it usually led to suffering. Oh, maybe not in our lives, but behind every one of us there was a bloody trail to one degree or another. We've hurt other people so many times. "Which in times past we were not a people, but now are the people of God, which had not obtained mercy, but now have obtained mercy. So in the past, we weren't called of God. So we have compartments, files. And in those files are memories, lots of memories of the way we used to talk, the way we used to think, the way we used to act, right? It's in there, isn't it? You remember. I'm not asking you to bring it up, but you understand my point. I'm asking you to remember there was a past life in which we had totally different values, totally different standards, totally different vocabulary. I'll tell you that for sure. But now that's got to change. There are memories of how we handled ourselves, and there's memories of sin that we enjoy. And it makes it so easy to slip right back into that habit or that memory or that behavior. And there's only one way to quit going back to the past. As Paul said, he could do all things through Jesus Christ who strengthened him, all things through Jesus Christ that was holding him like that pen on the Bible. We can do it. The problem is that we don't take him into every single part of our lives. There's some places that are vacant, and there's other places that are cluttered with other stuff that perhaps shouldn't even be there. And so this is something we can do and must do in order to overcome in this life. So 1 Peter 4 in this case, 1 Peter 4. I know there's problems in life. Everybody has problems. I know that your life is a difficult one because mine is, and it's going to get more difficult as the economy unravels. And as we see those things happen that are going to be happening, as we cascade into the days that are the end days, the end of time and the end of America and Jacob's trouble. But I look back and I think about the problems I faced. And sometimes they were overwhelming. And I remember once I was depressed for almost 2 solid years in my own miry thoughts of deep darkness. You know why? Because Christ wasn't there. That's why. I didn't let him in that compartment. I kept that private to myself. And I deserved it. I was suffering and I deserved it. And so I just kept all that pain and suffering to myself. But you understand my point. I needed to bring Christ in there so that he was a part of it. I look back at it and I think it was because I didn't bring him into it. 1 Peter 4 and verse 12 talks about this, saying this. Beloved, think it not strange concerning the fiery trial, which is to try you as though some strange thing happened to you. But rejoice inasmuch as you are partakers in Christ's sufferings, that when his glory shall be revealed, you may be glad also. Well, how glad do you think you're going to be? With exceeding joy. Exceeding joy. If you be reproached for the name of Christ, happy are you, for the Spirit of glory and of God rests on you. On their part, he's evil spoken of, but on your part, he is glorified. But let none of you suffer as a murderer or a thief or as an evildoer or a busybody in other people's matters. Yet if any man suffers as a Christian, let him not be ashamed, but let him glorify God on his behalf. There's no shame in doing the right thing at all. Even if everyone else in the world thinks you're foolish or they think you're an absolute idiot or they're calling you the worst of names or doing the worst of atrocities to us, that is painful. But I tell you this, it can't get us down if Christ is with us in it. You understand? If we build a habit of keeping Christ in us at all times and staying in contact with him, whether we're eating, whether we're drinking, what we're reading, what we're watching, how the way we're speaking to one another, and in the dealings we do that are in business, if we keep him in connection, as Dennis calls it, if we're tethered to him, you know, locked in, just chain, lock, if we do that, it's not going to be able to affect us. It's not going to drag us down. It's going to enable us to endure it, and it's going to be a great honor. In 2003, a study was done from the Barna Research Group. Their work showed that many of our country's morals and spiritual challenges are directly related to one thing. It was the absence of a biblical worldview among the people. They studied over 2,033 adults in this study, and they found 4% had a biblical view that they applied in their life. 4%. Now, what's the percentage of the people in the Church of God that do this, that are actually applying the Bible, applying God's Spirit, applying His law in the lives they live when they're outside of church? It's got to be more than 4%. But it's not high in the Laodicean era. It's much lower than Christ wants. It's hurting Him. And so what is He doing? Knocking. He's knocking on some compartments. And He's saying, let me in. Let's sup together. Let's be together. Let's do this together. Let me hold you up. And we're going, well, not this one. This one's mine. We do it sometimes, don't we? I think if you admit. So we live in this world. We work in it. We play in it. What percentage of the church makes their decisions based on the Bible today? We just can't allow ourselves to drift with this world and this society and its standards, morals, and values. We can't allow ourselves to compare ourselves to the world. In order to be real disciples of Jesus, we've got to know the Bible. We've got to know the way that Jesus lived, and we've got to know the things that He did, and we've got to live and think those ways and do them in our lives. The Bible tells us to put on Jesus Christ. Now, some women love shopping. Probably all women love shopping. I don't know. I met one or two that didn't, I think, though. But it was something that was easy for them. It was something that sometimes is very exciting to them. And I know I've known women that have spent an entire day shopping. They'll spend so much time looking over the various kinds of clothing. They'll check out everything about it with what I think is a very trained eye. They'll feel the material. They'll try it on. They'll see how it hangs on them. They'll check out the color and the shape. And they'll try one and then another before they make their decision. You know, what if we were to put on Christ like that? We were that close that we were actually looking at it that way, trying Him on in each one of the situations that are in our lives. Halloween is coming soon. And you know what a lot of people are thinking? What kind of costume am I going to wear? Because it tells a lot about the person what kind of costume they're going to wear. It's interesting to me. They all wear these different ones. You know, my question is, do we wear a costume even though we don't keep Halloween? They wear different ones to be like a princess or a superhero or some kind of wicked spirit or something. But it reflects them choosing who and what they want to be. And so I'm saying today, who do we want to be? Do we want to be like Jesus Christ? Do we want to put Him on? And do we want to wear Him like a cloak, for instance, and be so very different from the rest of this world? We're going to go through each day of our lives as we go to Ephesians 4 first. What kind of costume are you going to put on? How are you going to act, in other words? Is it going to be that you look like Jesus Christ would look? What are we going to look like? Him or the old man? That's the question. Are we put on Jesus Christ? Ephesians 4 and verse 1. Ephesians 4 and verse 1. Therefore, the prisoner of the Lord, beseech you that you walk worthy of your vocation where you have been called. And I'm telling you today a way we can do that. We can walk worthy of it if we include Him in every compartment of our life. We're called to be holy. We can't let ourselves be affected by the society around us. And so it says this in verse 14, skipping over to verse 14, that we henceforth be no more children tossed to and fro and carried about with every wind of doctrine by the sleight of men or the cunning craftiness whereby they lie in wait to deceive. And they do that. They have meetings to design advertisements and to design movies and to design TV skits to advance their agenda. Just like any novel that's ever written, always the author has an agenda. And these men and women go to school and they learn how to write these things so that they will appeal to human nature and they will change a society in the direction they want it to go. They do. Are we going to follow that? But instead, we should be speaking the truth in love, and that we should grow up into Him in all things, which is the head, even Christ. So we've got to grow up into Him. We've got to grow up so that we become like Him, so that we think like Him and we begin to behave like He does. Grow up as Christians to put Christ where He belongs in every part of our lives. Put Him in charge of our lives and keep no compartment from Him. It's time to be a transparent Christian, isn't it? It's time to be the Christians you and I were called to be. It's time for Christ to affect every aspect of our lives, no matter what it is. Time to put Him where He belongs. Put Him in everything we say, everything we eat, everything we drink, everything we watch, everything that we do at home, everything we do for our employer, everything we do with our relationship with our family, and everything we do with church members. It's time to get rid of the God self. My dear friends, let's open up all those compartments in our lives to Jesus Christ. He is knocking, and now is the time. And let's begin to integrate Him into every aspect of our life, every single aspect, so that we will indeed be genuine Christians.
Thank you for listening, and we hope you found the message beneficial. If you would like to know more about the Eternal Church of God, we would like to hear from you. You may contact us at 1-800-723-6108. You may also visit our website at eternalcog.org. Once again, thanks for listening.